And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Unafeared, here on Declare Your Independence. From me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Who we have on? Gary Johnson, Libertarian candidate for POTUS, President of these United States of America. And I tell you, this is the one thing that, as much as we were entertained by the debate maybe you were, I didn't watch it. But the thing is that we got someone that really, 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 really understands this freedom thing. And I tell you, what's the purpose of government? Defend my rights, my individuality to do whatever I want and pursue my happiness, and they in the way. Well, who wants to get them out of the way? And who's demonstrated to get out of the way? This is one thing. If I wanted to have someone in the debates, let me tell you who I want. Somebody in an executive position that was governor that vetoed 700 and something bills because he could. Okay? Veto. Dr. Veto. I mean, whatever we got nickname you, Gary, but I'm saying that right there should have you up in the debates. You weren't in debates. Tell me why you weren't in debates.
Well, you know what? We filed suit to get into these debates, and what a bunch of to-do about nothing. The vice presidential debates ended the other night with Ryan saying, look, we're going to increase spending by 3%. They're going to increase spending by 4.5%. What's the big deal? Well, that's my point. There is just no big deal. I mean, this is Tweedledee, Tweedledum. The country is facing gigantic problems that neither party wants to address. It's like head in the sand, and somehow we're going to grow our way out of it. I don't think so. They're debating over who's going to spend more money on Medicare when Medicare is a program that has to be cut. It's a program that you and I put $30 into and we get a $100 benefit out of it. By extension, we put 30 grand into a benefit that 100 grand comes out. That is not sustainable, nor is Medicaid, nor is military spending. And forget about the spending on the military side. Just stop with the military interventions that have us as the villain of the world as opposed to, the shining beacon on the hill.
Well, this is all known, to a lot of people, anybody that's paying attention, that, it's unsustainable. And that which can't continue doesn't. Okay? And we know this. So you're sitting in a position. I'm really, really glad. We've been supportive here in Arizona of your campaign. Even, when you were running as a Republican, you're in the debates. We'd have fundraisers for you here. We have parties and everything. You have a lot of guys out there wearing Ron Paul Revolution T-shirts, and you're, cool with that. And they're supporting Gary. Gary, we need to have positive reinforcement of people that do the liberty message coming out there. Every one of you, it's not an individual sport kind of thing. It's all we want to be free and left alone kind of thing. And now that you're starting to get this kind of attention in comparison with these guys, I love the fact that you come out and you go, go ahead and have your little debate. And then I get to talk. And then there are people that are listening now, are they not?
No, clearly, there's a big pickup in attention, and I'm talking about faxes, phone calls, emails, all across the country. Gigantic momentum, and this is really just taking off from Ron Paul. Ron Paul has laid the groundwork here. I couldn't be more appreciative of him and the awareness that he's brought about all across the country.
The one thing that also has gotten some attention, did you catch Mark Victor's debate with Jeff Flake?
No, I did not.
Oh, you got to go watch. I've been getting some, the people I respect, high level, what's up? And I really am glad that you guys are topping the ticket here in Arizona, because it's always Arizona. It's always Arizona. And I'm going, and to have a southwestern governor from New Mexico, a border state, here that understands, things like the drug war and immigration and economics and development and no wide open, leave me alone spaces and all that. I am. What is your opposition to you even having a voice? Who are they, them, those? Who are the bad guys? The ones who won't leave us alone? The one keeping us, the man keeping you down? Who is that guy? Who is it?
Well, I can guess at all of the above, but it's big media, and it's the parties themselves. It's the parties themselves that, in this case, I'm arguing I was a very successful two-term governor of New Mexico, and I was unfairly excluded. I'm not talking about being marginalized here. I think Ron Paul was marginalized. I think he continued to be marginalized. I thought it was going to be difficult to marginalize two people on stage talking about the same things, but I didn't find myself marginalized. I just found myself excluded, and the issues are just way too big. Look, let's not bomb Iran. We're going to find ourselves with another 100 million enemies to this country that we wouldn't have otherwise had, and what are we going to do, go into a two-year bombing maintenance program of Iran? I mean, the debate last night, they're talking about who's to blame, with regard to the Libyan embassy. Well, we're to blame with our foreign policy that has us militarily intervening. We're to blame for having people in those embassies in the first place. Why provide a target in an area that is just looking for targets, looking to make an example of the United States? Just nibbling at the edges, and everybody wants to pull the trigger. Everybody wants to pull the trigger first. Obama, last election. Look, were we still going to be in Afghanistan? Were we going to double down in Afghanistan having elected Obama 4 years ago? No way, and yet that's exactly what he did. So nothing changes. We continue to militarily intervene. We have a growing police state in this country. And then when it comes to spending and debt, it's completely unsustainable, and we're headed to a monetary collapse unless we fix it.
Well, having you there, you have to be getting some kind of satisfaction out of the support of, rank and file and Generation Next and the young, and people understand or at least give an ear to your... are you feeling the love? Are you feeling it from the people?
Yes, and it's really gratifying to be the guy that's telling the truth on the stage. I mean, having a whole card speaking the truth is really a wonderful luxury. And I just get back to so much to do about nothing. I ran two campaigns, Ernie, I ran two campaigns for governor where I did not mention my opponent in print, radio, or television. And then the second go-around, when I ran for re-election, I debated my opponent 28 times.
Wow.
I just think people are really, really hungry to vote for someone as opposed to the lesser of two evils. And what we desperately want is leadership. I think we all understand that this has got to be mutual sacrifice on the part of all of us if we're going to survive what is going to be a monetary collapse. And if we don't think it's going to happen, for kids listening right now, shield your ears. Is Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny, and the Tooth Fairy coming? Well, adults, I would pose to adults that same question. Do you think that if we continue to do nothing on these issues, that it's going to fix itself? I don't think so.
I don't think so either. And this is, and I think Generation Next doesn't think so. And I think they're looking for a future. And a lot of it, all this collapse that everybody keeps talking about, when you're 25, you don't have anything anyway, and a whole future, you just want to get it all over with and get out of the way. I remember having the feeling in the early 80s. I'm like, can we hurry up and just push all the buttons so we can start over and get done? I'm tired of hearing about it, And hopefully that feeling went away after a couple of nanoseconds. But I tell you, I understand the feeling. And the people are red day for somebody to just tell them the freaking truth. Well, truth teller, Gary Johnson, libertarian candidate for president of the United States of America. And we want to help. We got some young people in here who want to help, too.
Quantum Vibe. It's year 2523. There are colonies on Venus, Mars, and Mercury. People travel in bubbles, fly at hyperspeed, with brain implants and artificial gravity. A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. QuantumVibe.com from Big Head Press.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
At least not taxpayer-funded. You know, we get to have our own roads. This is, and you know where we put them? Exactly wherever we want and get the most produced and get the most out of it and everything. And it's not for payoffs or, make work job for because somebody needs to say they got a job for somebody. You know, it's how about being productive? How about free market stuff? How about? And this is, this is what, I don't know if I'm divulging any secrets. Here we go. Gary Johnson, we'd be nice to him. We demonstrate that, there's like a movement. There's a generational thing coming on. He might be around for 2016. This is campaign, not just for now. This is build up 2016. We're doing we are not afraid. We ain't going anywhere. Okay. If you can be a steadfast, all-word, get more and more, libertarian, pure, being real butthead, we can do it with you. And I'm telling you, Gary, we got some young guys in here on it. Devin and Derek, say hello to, sometime, one of these days, he's going to be president of the United States of America.
So how are you doing, Mr. Johnson?
Devin and Derek, it's great to be with you this morning. And I understand you guys have become... probably have always been activists, but I appreciate your activism. I think what I've come to understand is that activists, that other kids, whether you're grown up, whether you're a young person, activists have a way of attracting others that look to you for information, and I just appreciate you taking the time and being those activists.
Go ahead and, has buzz on the presidential thing on high school senior campuses, does anybody care? I mean, are you guys the only guys out there doing something, advocating, or is there, some buzz?
We're on a 40 campus tour, colleges and universities. I'm doing 20. Judge Jim Gray, my running mate, is doing 20. There's been a whole lot of enthusiasm at colleges and universities, but contained in that college and university tour have been a couple of show-ups that... at high schools, and it's been off the charts at the high schools, off the charts. I mean, it's been a gigantic surprise. And I was, we're talking about this off camera. I've attended a lot of Republican events over the years. And by the way, I ran as a Republican governor of New Mexico completely outside the political system. I went and I introduced myself to the Republican Party before I ran as governor of New Mexico. But I've attended a lot of political events where political candidates get up and speak, and I've always cringed at a lot of what Republicans have to say. Well, now I've attended a whole bunch of libertarian events with libertarian candidates, and there is nothing that any candidate has ever said that makes me cringe. It's something to be proud of. It's a philosophy, military non-intervention, getting government out of the bedroom, getting government out of our lives, spending within our means. Let's balance the federal budget now. And, of course, you can't start talking about less government until you can actually peel back what we currently have to sustainable levels, which would be back to this notion of spending within the amount of revenue that we collect. And
Let me ask these young men, something. I mean, the issues that Gary's articulating here, is this the buzz, amongst your friends? Do they even care?
It is. I mean, they do have a lot of dinner table talk going around the school, and Facebook, you'll see a lot of it. But we were at ASU with Gary a few weeks ago, and there were some other high school students there. So there is a little bit of activism amongst high school students, but a lot of it is regurgitation, like Alex said a while back, you know.
It's just repeat whatever 3x5 card they gave you at the whatever.
Yeah.
So you guys have a little bit deeper understanding. And that's what kind of the social networking has done, is giving you a little bit more understanding.
And then one other thing you get is when in the schools, they're always presenting you with the opposite idea of libertarianism and whatnot, you know. And so with that being confronted with them, when they confront that every day, it's kind of hard for them eventually to start looking at the other ideas, even though they naturally agree with them.
Naturally agree with you, Gary. I mean, are you feeling you're on the right side? You got the power?
Well, that's the great thing about this right now is to be the truth sayer in all of this. And believe me, the truth, you know, I'm the first one to admit that if what I'm presenting as the premise for my conclusions is wrong, tell me, and I'll correct it immediately and go forward. But Obama, Romney's going to balance the federal budget, but he's going to increase spending for the military, and he's going to hold Medicare in check? Look, it doesn't add up.
They don't care. They just lie.
That's exactly the case. This is all about maintaining the status quo, and if we think maintaining the status quo is going to get us out of where we're at, it's not. And people really care about civil liberties. People really care about their own lives and making decisions in their own lives. People really care about the fact that we are we're militarily intervening. There's a reason for it. And Obama, Romney making the argument that I'm going to pull the trigger first. I mean, clearly, Iran, in my estimation, I mean, Romney is just itching to pull the Iran trigger.
You know, they're competing for that. I remember, you know, towards the end of the 2008 election cycle in the Democratic primary between Hillary and Obama, it's like, who's going to be more aggressive? And I'm going, wow, man, is that what it takes? Well, somebody has to fill the other side. You know, somebody's got it. You know, somebody's going to take advantage of this, you know, non-interventionist foreign policy, and that's you, and we want to help. You know, the one thing that I think is of the most interest is I think the Republican Party and the Republican supporters here are in desperation mode. They have lost the freedom vote. There's no way that they can retain that with any legitimacy. And they don't know what to do to get it back other than, you know, just kind of ignore Dr. Paul in this thing. And then here comes Gary Johnson, says, hello, I got the torch. Now what? And I don't know. What's the feeling you're getting from the inside of the politicos that are, oh, you're going to give Obama the election as if we see a difference?
Well, it's been put to the test here in five states. And by put to the test, they've actually polled. Who do I take more votes from? Well, in New Mexico, in Colorado, in Nevada, I take more votes away from Obama. In North Carolina, Michigan, I take more votes away from Romney. I don't think, and I know you'll be the first one to agree, I don't care who I take the votes from. Neither one of these parties are talking about the things that we really care about. And with a broad brushstroke. Look, I think we're all fiscally responsible. I think Americans, generally speaking, are socially accepting. And Romney has, talking about immigration the other night, that he's talking about self-deportation. It's just such a disconnect. Romney, early on in the debate, says it's a no-brainer to build a fence across the border. Well, I don't have one molecule of brain based on that statement.
Oh, Gary Johnson. Only had him for the half hour. I'll see if I keep him over. We'll see what we can do.
All right, Ernie.
But Gary Johnson, I tell you, we're ready for you here in Arizona. We got some stuff going on.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
You know, we're going to try and get, you know, Mark on. Mark J. Victor Turnlaw. You know what he did yesterday? I wasn't able to make it. I mean, I wanted to go. And he did closing arguments on the baby Gabriel Elizabeth What's-Her-Face case, you know, yesterday. And I haven't been paying attention. I don't care. I know, you know, Mark is when you're going to Huskow, you want him as your criminal defense attorney, guilty or not. I can tell you that right now. And I tell you, that's one thing. This is, we do Freedom Summits, and people, they say this. They go, Mark, you know, you're like defending the scum of the earth and this and that and so on. A lot of times it's not. You know, it's amazing the stories you get of just how abusive government is. And it's a political thing, or it's because they can thing, or they're just freaking blood-dripping, fang-tooth, horn-having, pointy-tail people going in and just ripping you out of your life and putting you into the system so they can shake you down for money. It's just all the king's men are kind of, you know, and from an activist standpoint, you know, and you know it's too late to fix it. You just want government to be bad. Know what I mean? It's like you got really bad politician. Oh, we got to replace him. I'm like, no, that guy's the poster child for scumbaggishness, man. I'm like, you know, we want that guy. We want that guy. So this is what I'm looking at, and I want to, if we have more time with Gary Johnson, I want to talk about, you know, Jeff Flake, the U.S. Senate candidate, the incumbent congressman that's running for John Kyle vacating, and then there's the Democrat Carmona, and he was the Surgeon General, you know, in 2002 under Bush. I mean, he was an independent or something, but he went Democrat and all this kind of. But, you know, Flake, you know, when Mark finally, he said, oh, you know, he's a Republican. Oh, so my friends think he's not that bad. Oh, and I'm going, yeah. Scumbag, okay? And you will find out. Well, he went and did the debate and spent time with him, going, he goes, ew. I'm like, yeah, ew. So these guys are, ew. So Mark is, you know, he's high profile. You know, we both thought we're just kind of, you know, that type of personality. Man, together, oh. You have the legal part in the court, criminal defense. You know, I might need me a criminal defense attorney, you know what I mean? So, you know, it's good to have a good friend like that. He's on my speed dial. Mark, it's time. You know, so he is really good. And I remember at a Freedom Summit, people were making the point, you know, being a criminal defense attorney is, you know, you're defending some bad guys. And this is what he had to say. He goes, oh, you know, there are some bad guys. You know, I've defended people. They're bad guys. You know, most of them not bad guys, but, you know, there are some bad guys. And it's not whether they're, you know, vile, evil, and all this other. That's not the point. It's, can the state prove it? That is the point. As a criminal defense attorney, you go, you know what? You know, it's your job to do your job. And beyond a reasonable doubt, to prove that that's how the system works. And if you can't do that, it's because you're incompetent or you just don't have the evidence. So that's what he does. And it's just, he goes, Ernie, whenever you have in a criminal defense trial, anything that helps the government, that's allowed. Anything that helps the defendant, oh, you can't use that. It's so blatant. It's so obvious. Let me tell you how it is. You watch, you know, the debate that he did with Jeff Flake and Carmona and how he was treated. Now, of course, he came out shining. Kick. I got a whole bunch of emails. They got flooded. They were like, this was the biggest joke ever. And he came out smelling like a rose, a white rose. And the thing is that demonstrated how screwed up this system is. Gary Johnson is demonstrating how screwed up this system is. So my question to Devin and Derek is this. In this system that is so jacked up. Now, you know, I tell you, as a young actress, when I was, you know, your age and young, you know, I spent most of my time just trying to convince people that it was all a game. It was all crap. It was all make-believe. It was pretend. Anybody got to convince you guys? I mean, is it kind of, you're starting to get it?
Well, we often spend time trying to convince other people, and one venue I use most frequently would be the banking system. Most people don't understand the monetary system, and that's actually one of the scariest parts, is because they continue to debase things, and you constantly basically work for the currency, and that's one thing that I use to convince people that, you know, this is mostly a game. If they're stealing from you all the time, you know, how can you take it seriously?
They go, yeah, you got to do this. Oh, by the way, you got to pay for us doing it to you. And I'm going, no, you don't even got to pay for it. We're just going to indent your children. I'm like, this is so jacked up. How do you have any rationale? Oh, who's on the other side? Is it the teachers? How the teachers? Oh, you got to. Okay. Seniors, high school, private school, though. Okay, you guys are a private school.
But we went to both public and private.
Okay, now this, let me ask you this question. As you're going through this process of, you know, kind of like, you know, this learning thing, and you're going, you know, that sounds like crap, and I got a smartphone, okay? So how many kids in the back go, beep, 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 and you go, BS, BS, are you untruth teller? You're evading the you know, the factual information that happened to be out there, you dummy. I mean, how much of that goes on to where the teachers are being taught?
Well, it happens quite a bit, especially in certain economics classes or history classes where it's obviously skewed. And then they immediately, right after you start saying something, do everything they can to move on to the next subject, or you're interrupting the class, or, you know, the usual. But
do you attend church?
We attend once a month mass at school.
Okay. Well, my point is that the difference between instruction from the church and the pulpit has pretty much the same kind of connotation as from, you know, lectern in the classroom. It's mm-hmm. like too many questions. You're not supposed to read it yourself. You know, we're going to tell you what it means. And I'm like, you know, there's a big, giant, probably faster than I anticipated, drop off in a religious identity that a lot of people have. And being at a private, you know, religious school, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, are you guys starting to see that your classmates kind of, are they backing off of this religion thing? Is your generation is starting to kind of dissipate a little bit?
You know, I feel like there's a little bit of both. There's a lot of people at that school that really feel like they want to stay true to their religion and they truly believe in it. But then there is also a few people who are just attending there and don't believe in the ideology. But a lot of the ideologies are pretty mainstream and basic in terms of morals, but they obviously contradict themselves every now and then.
Contradictions being challenged more by your generation?
It's like the inner contradictions of the state, you know, that happens a lot at the school. They say, oh, well, we have a moral principle we pledge, but at the same time we make the rule, it kind of self-violates by making the rule itself. You know, like, for example, when the government says that you can't steal, but it has to steal from you to enforce that, so to speak. So same idea.
Well, you have a because I would imagine that's what they're trying to do. They want to instill a morality. You know, they want to, you know, kind of, this is right and this is wrong. Well, if that's wrong, then why are you doing it? You're not allowed to ask that question, okay?
Exactly.
So I'm just wondering, the inconsistency, how does this cognitive dissonance of the system, or even in your own head, get cleared up? I mean, you know, are you looking at, you see something like, you know, Gary Johnson, a libertarian out there, advocating for decriminalization of drugs, you know, not blowing people up. I never got the Christian aspect of this blowing people up thing. I just, that, you know, is that Mark? Mark, wait. Of course, he calls in the last, you know, freaking 30 seconds of the thing. Mark, we just had Gary Johnson on. Man, he's going to do this Bitcoin thing. We're going to do a bit bomb. You guys need to get all in on this. And we got Derek and Devin in here, and we're all out. They've been out passing out flyers and putting up signs and everything. It's all good. You know, how you feeling about the campaign, man? You rock and roll and whatnot?
Yeah, I mean, you know me and Ernie, I'm just busting it out for freedom. I'm like a tank. I just go forward.
Okay, now you go ahead and say that we're talking to break. Can we get you to the top of the hour, the next segment?
Yeah, I suppose so.
Come on, it's campaign season, man, and we want to hear all about your nationally televised closing argument trial. That was yesterday, and we'll talk about some other goodies, and we'll get Gary Johnson here in Arizona. We're all going to have some fun. Here we come.
Before I became a customer of Liberty Coin and Precious Metals, I called one of the internet companies that sells gold. I didn't like the impersonal hard sell or the fact they were in another state. Liberty's different. I could walk in their store, look them in the eye, see, feel, and walk out with what I'd bought. No hidden fees, no hard sell, no mystery, just great prices. And Liberty's one of the biggest gold sellers in the Southwest. Their experts took the time to get to know me and my investment needs. There's so many reasons I'm now a Liberty Coin and Precious Metals customer, but the most important is I trust Liberty. Remember, they're right here in Scottsdale. So drop in or call Liberty Coin and Precious Metals, 877-888-8052. That's 877-888-8052. Or on the web at libertycpm.com. Liberty.
We know you're out there. We can feel you now. We know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. We don't know the future. We aren't here to tell you how this is going to end. We're here to tell you how it's going to begin. We're going back to editing the next edition of Freedom's Phoenix Digital Magazine now, where we are telling the people what you don't want them to know. We're showing them a world without you, a world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries, a world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice we leave to you. Subscribe at freedomsphoenixeasy.com. That's freedoms with an S, phoenixeasing.com.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
Yeah, what do we want to break free from?
I want to break free from your
lies. Lies, no more lies, 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 lies. Parents on fire, people, tell me lies, okay? Now, who's not telling me lies? You know, who's advocating fur? All right, well, I give you Mark Victor. You know, Mark and I have known each other, wow, man, it's going on like 20 years. And I tell you know, I remember when Mark first got out of law school, all Butler Schaeferized and everything, and he said, hey, you bunch of compromisers?
So, hey, Ernie, I think I'd say 23 years.
It's been a while, man. You know, this
like
is,
that.
You know, we're gearing up towards, it's getting to a point, we might have to do a Freedom Summit in 2013. I think it, you know, we might be due again. You know, we'll go ahead and we'll talk about it. But I tell
you know, I definitely consider it if I'm not in the middle of a run for the United States Senate or a high-profile national criminal case.
Well, you're always going to be one or the other, that's for sure. You know, the one thing, you had your case, well, in the case, I'm sure, you know, you're up there closing arguments, nationally televised, we're going to get the video and get it up when you find that, let us know and everything, but, you know, that is so definitely your thing, but I tell you this, you got an opportunity, you're bringing in, you know, freedom principles and stuff like that, you know, tell me what you worked into that, you know, how you curing people.
Well, Ernie, you know I'm going to bring some freedom in. If I get a chance to stand up, and not just in front of a jury, but in front of the nation, I'm going to talk about the founding fathers and the principles our country was founded upon. I even talked a little bit about the Boston Massacre and John Adams and Sam Adams and the Boston Tea Party. Went through all through that stuff, and you know I never miss an opportunity to try to inspire people to think about freedom.
Well, how did that come into this case? I already know the details of the case, don't want to know until we get to hang, drink beer. But the thing is that it is, you bring in the role of the jury and our system and all that, and how did you tie that in?
Well, the Boston Massacre was a case that John Adams took to defend British colonial soldiers who were really wrongfully accused of murder. It was an unpopular case. Everybody hated him. But, he inspired the jury to follow the law and showed that most of them were acquitted. They really weren't guilty of any crime at all. So I was using that as inspiration for our jury to rise to higher principles and follow the law, even though my client, Elizabeth Johnson, wasn't the most popular person in the courtroom.
Nah, no, I understand that. That's why I'm waiting for the video. Are you going to... It was so. It was broad. Your closing argument was broadcast live over the court TV or whatever, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, people were watching it all across the country.
Wow, they got to get a dose of Mark J. Victor, man. That is, they'll never recover from that. That's cool. That's cool. Did you get some response back from people that saw it?
Yeah, I mean, everyone I've spoken to thinks that I'm going to get a not guilty on kidnapping, but it only matters what the jury thinks, and so. They're all deliberating today. We could get a verdict today. We could get a verdict tomorrow. We'll just have to wait and see.
Very cool. Well, now that you got that big, giant, you know, log off your shoulders, you know, now you can focus a little bit on some other stuff, including this U.S. Senate run thing. And I'm telling you, how's that been going?
Man, I would love to get into another debate, because I kind of went into that debate thinking, you know, maybe Jeff Flake wasn't so bad. At least he talks about freedom and small government. And I walked out of there thinking, this guy is not the least bit interested in freedom or anything other than just getting elected. And so if I got into another debate, I think I would be a lot more aggressive. A lot of people thought I was aggressive during the first debate, but that was me being as nice as possible.
Well, you know, what is the most popular thing that you represent that people are coming to you for? They're going, yeah, we're glad you're there because of what?
I think people want to hear about cutting spending. And none of these, like, for example, when Jeff Flake was talking about earmarks as his hallmark achievement, I pointed out it was, you know, 0.5% of the budget. It's just tinkering. You know, I said, we need to cut government spending by 50% in the first year and then talk about where we're going from there. And I think that got some attention. You know, I think if I asked these guys, what departments would you cut, I don't think these guys could name anything, because I think they're really just too afraid to upset anybody, to tell anybody that they're not going to get federal dollars for some project somewhere. Somebody's going to be upset, and they just don't have the backbone, I think, to make that happen.
You know, there's another thing about the earmarks. Dr. Paul made a big deal. He goes, hey, man, if we don't designate where it gets spent, then the executive branch spends it. It's not like it's less money. It's not like you do away with the earmarks. You didn't accomplish, you know, like, less spending. What you did is that the Congress doesn't take any responsibility for where it gets spent. And I'm going, okay, that's one argument. Now, of course, they use this earmark to bribe congressmen in the voting for whatever. It's just, it's not the money as much as it is the power to spend the money. Take away the power to spend the money, and then the problem kind of goes away. But they want the power. The power, yeah, the power, the power.
The bottom line is, Ernie, it's posturing. It's a way to talk about cutting spending without actually cutting any spending.
Right.
It's a way to say, oh, well, let's cut the earmarks, without actually saying, here are the departments of the federal government that I would cut. Who said that? Besides Ron Paul, what politician on the planet Earth, in the United States anyway, has said, here are the departments of the federal government that I would cut? I haven't heard it.
Well, you know, you and I maybe remember, you know, the Republican Revolution, Newt Gingrich, 94, and all that kind of stuff, and they promised they're going to blah, blah, blah. At the end of all of that, the only thing they actually cut in government, just to say they did, was a tea inspector that was $135,000 salary in New York. That was it. Derek and Devin in here, these young guys. You didn't know that, did you? That was their big Republican Revolution, is we cut $135,000 from the federal budget, this one guy, just to say they did.
And I think that's the thing, Ernie. I think people are finally getting a little tired of all this posturing. I mean, you know, the other thing was, when I came out in the debate the other night, we were talking about the border, and it was really about immigration, but, you know, I don't think you can talk about border security without talking about the drug war. So I kind of threw that out there, drug war, drug war, drug war, and it was just silence. Let's just move on to the next thing. And, you know, as hard as I tried to bring up the drug war, these guys just want to completely ignore it. And I don't blame them, because they're too spineless to come out and say we need to stop the drug war. But on the other hand, they know it needs to stop. They know there's no argument on the other side. So the best they can do is just ignore the issue, which is exactly what happens from both sides. The Republicans and the Democrats are both just equally guilty. They're co-conspirators in the drug war, in the Iraq war, in the Afghanistan war, in the $16 trillion debt that we have in this country. They're both co-conspirators. They're both guilty. They both keep going in the wrong direction. Both of them, neither one of those two parties can even slow the rate of growth of spending.
Or want to.
No, they don't even want to. No, you're right.
And this is, we had Gary Johnson on in the first half hour, and, you know, he's going to be we're going to do a bit bomb, you know, Bitcoin thing. I know now that you got time and trials, or you and I need to talk about it, and we'll get it all taken care of. But I tell you this, you know, he's already planning. He's going to run in 2016 for president again. He's got a good start on this thing. He wants to go in and keep, we might have something to do, man. You know, are you encouraged to stay in this kind of political slapping around a little bit? You getting encouraged?
Well, I may, but, you know, there are some issues. I have to sit and I want to talk with him and really get a feel for this whole flat tax thing he's talking about.
Because I think we can get rid of that in the next time. I just, you know, he got locked into that. I'm I've been beating on him from the beginning. I think he's starting to weaken.
Yeah, I mean, I you know, I like that I got an opportunity in my debate for Senate to come out and say I would never, ever, ever support a tax increase for anyone in any class for any reason ever, period. And not only that, we need to completely abolish the income tax. I mean, it was, again, it was stunning silence after I said that. You know, it's amazing to me. I can't believe nobody's calling these guys on this. People like Mitt Romney are coming out and saying, oh, we need to have major tax reform. We need to lower the tax bracket a little bit, and then we need to close the loopholes so the whole project is revenue neutral.
They don't want to talk about any of that. I tell you what, it was moderated so badly, one of your supporters almost got in a fist fight with the moderator after the debate. I don't know how much you want to talk about that, but this is what I've been hearing. I mean, it got ugly. How much do you know about that?
I know a lot about it. I was standing right there when it happened. But yeah, it wasn't that he did a bad job. It was just that he clearly didn't want me being moderate. He didn't want me in the debate. And so it was pretty clear that any time I was even thinking about opening my mouth, he had his hand up. Just go back to the Republican or the Democrat. And yeah, eventually, you know, I got a lot of comments, a lot of emails, even from across the nation about that debate. And people in other states were kind of like, hey, that moderator was unfair. They invited you. They should have given you more of an opportunity to speak.
You know, Glenn Jacobs, a lot of people know him as Kane in the WWE, a really good libertarian, really smart guy. He sent me an email. He saw it on C-SPAN. He's like, are you freaking kidding me? Man, Mark, even though they did that to you, Mark, kick their ass! Ass kicking Mark J. Victor. We're having fun here. This is when we have fun. This is when activists have fun. You know, but we already won before we even get to the election. You know what election night is? The activist libertarians? It's a party! It's a party! We're like, woo, we already won. We don't care what they say or how they turn the dial and what number they come up with. We already infected the minds.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember.
Me, Ernest Hancock, another independence declaring kind of individuals in this hour. And we got Devin and Derek here all day. In the third hour, we're going to have plenty of time to spend with them. And, you know, tonight we have, there's a thing called the Economic Discussion Group. And it's been a, you know, LaFave thing, you know, for those of you that know. It's kind of, you know, light the darkness, a little candle kind of deal. And let's get some truth and justice in there. And it kind of got to where, as long as it's Republican. So there's some anarchist liberty. There's not really a lot of libertarians in there. They're anarchists, okay? Now, there's the Republican side of it, and they probably make up a majority or a greater majority. But at least, you know, 20% of them becoming, you know, once you become a libertarian, I mean, you know, it's how do you not become an anarchist after, I mean, what? You want to be part of this, you know, my turn at the ring or something? No. But what happens is this evening, I'm going to go ahead and call the, you know, I didn't confirm. Usually you confirm earlier. I'm going to call them and say, hey, man, can you add three? Because Devin and Derek, I take these young guys. I got some high school students that, you know, been doing, you know, I want you to go ahead and let me bring them and see if they'll buy into your crap. You know, and it's all, oh, we got, yeah, but Mitt Romney has the running mate, Paul Ryan, so then we can vote Republican now because he's like libertarian. Really?
Really?
Really? Okay. Here are the young men. You may convince them. I'll sit over here and be quiet and watch. Okay? I have no desire to go. You know, last month was, how are we going to convince the attendees that the people need to be ruled, and we might as well be the ones doing it. I mean, it's just the way humanity is. A bunch of sheep out there. Somebody's got to play shepherd, and we want to do it, okay? So I'm going, all right. So I didn't go. And this is part two of that. Right before the election, part D. You know, and this all, they're not talking to anybody that's going to do anything. They're just sitting there massaging themselves, trying to, you know, make sure that they, you know, can stand erect, you know, in the onslaught of. And I'm going, all right, you guys want to play? If the young men here want to go, I'll go. You know, so I can get them in. I'll see what I can do, work out with that, and I'll call one of the directors and see what we can do. So we'll go ahead and do that after the show. Now, this hour, we have Von Trend. Now, let's go ahead and see if I even got that right. Is that how you say your name, Von?
Well, everybody gets it wrong. It's Troidy.
Troidy!
Yes.
Troidy. See, he was late, so he didn't get me finding out before the show. That's a penalty. All right. So Von Troidy is an author of a book I got right here. I saw him at Libertopia. He listens to the show and so on. No, here's the book. What we got? Centrifugal Force. And what's it about? I get to say what it's about.
Okay.
Let's go ahead and read the description. That way we can spend more time, you know, with you on other stuff. All right. In this novel, in the near future, America is sliding towards tyranny. Oh, so it's a documentary. Okay. Dissident Joel Walter is wanted for a crime he didn't commit. His computer hacker friend Nephi introduces him to an underworld where technology is America's last bastion of freedom and privacy. He helps Joel assume a new identity and disappear into the technological underground. Ever-increasing repression drives Joel, Nephi, and others into open rebellion in a desperate bid to retain their precious liberties. In this open rebellion, you know, how are they rebelling? What are they doing?
It starts out basically Nephi and his associates. He's kind of with a hacker network, and they develop software that allows them to communicate completely anonymously and also to make economic transactions totally anonymously by a system they call e-barter. It starts out that way. It starts out with as a stealth movement, but as the government starts to see its revenues declining, it becomes repressive. It starts putting people in camps, and some of the other groups start coming out of the woodwork, groups of veterans, militia types, and so on. Because obviously, that's not what I'm advocating. But obviously, as
that means it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Yes. As the government, federal government weakens, other groups come out of the woodwork and start to jockey for power.
Now, this is, you know, you have some of our in-studio guests today, Devin and Derek Miller. They're local activists here, seniors at local high school. And they've been out, you know, advocating for, you know, the freedom thing and doing the libertarian deal. So there's some interest, I would imagine, in the themes in your book. So we're going to let them ask some questions and so on. But, you know, when you do this, what we're finding out in the media is that using different mediums of exchanging information, be it graphics, printed material, websites, you know, documentaries, YouTubes, and so on, has had a big impact on those exposed to it. In this book, what is the overriding philosophy and theme? By the time I get this done, I'm thinking, you know what? I'm thinking, you know, Vaughn has an opinion about something. You know, what's the opinion that comes out?
Well, the overriding theme is essentially the philosophy of non-aggression. Joel is at first, but also... Also, the people in the book feel an obligation to community, I mean, as a voluntary thing. Joel is in hiding for a while, and he comes up with a moral dilemma. He feels like his friends are risking their lives by being out there working on this software and trying to keep these networks up. And so he comes out and becomes part of it. He becomes an inspiration. He's has an anonymous underground blog, and so, as a fugitive, that's a big risk for him, but he feels like he has to speak out, and he is always, Joel is always the one who's counseling against any kind of violence.
This is, you know, I'm wondering where you pulled this story. Is it from, you know, current headlines, a technological understanding, a dystopian future you want to prepare for? I mean, the inspiration for the book is what? I mean... Where'd it come from?
Well, the inspiration came to me a long time ago. Unfortunately, it took me a while to put it together. But back in 1984, I heard Carl Hess speak here at the Libertarian National Convention. And the theme of his speech was that technology versus politics, the political action, wars, and so on, that stuff's forgotten in a little while. It doesn't have any lasting effect on human society, but technology is the only thing that really improves human life. Back in the 1400s, we had the Hundred Years' War between England and France. Nobody even remembers that nowadays. But at the same time, Gutenberg invented movable type. And that was a thing that revolutionized human society and for the better. So my thinking was, you know, having been involved in politics and the Libertarian Party and so on, and increasingly being frustrated, that the only way that we would achieve any sort of liberty would be to work on technology, was to have some sort of technology that would help us to protect our freedom.
Well, how's it working out? I mean, you know, is a double-edged sword kind of deal? Are we coming out ahead? What?
Absolutely, it's a double-edged sword. I mean, there's a lot of horrible things that are coming out, like drones and so on. But I think the internet has been fantastic. I mean, it's been a fantastic way for us to bypass the traditional controlled media. And it's really been getting the word out. I don't think the Ron Paul revolution, at least to the extent that he was able to popularize ideas of free market and so on, could have ever happened without the internet.
You know, the one thing that I realized, it was 1994, right, early 95, right after the election in 94, I was burned, okay? Well, I had to recover. You know, I'm sitting there, get to watch videos and count ceiling tiles. And as I'm recovering, all of a sudden it dawned on me, a friend of mine made sure I had, you know, an email, you know, the rudimentary, and I realized, for the first time in human history, they're able to get into the minds of the serfs, of the peasants. They can find you all your best friends, everything you think is important, they know. Did it scare them? I think it did.
A science fiction comic adventure from Big Head Press. Quantum Vibe. It's year 2523. There are colonies on Venus, Mars, and Mercury. People travel in bubbles, fly at hyperspeed, with brain implants and artificial gravity. A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. Quantum Vibe. There's a robot girl and zany creatures made with genetically engineered features, and corporate villains crave the opportunity to steal a profit from mother's ingenuity. A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. QuantumVibe.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
It's really tough, man. A-E-I, B-E-A-U. I got that from Jim Carrey. You know, in that, one of his movies. It made it a lot easier for me. You know, this is what we're going to be doing today. We got a lot of fun that we're going to have. There's a lot of things been going on. We were at Libertopia. You know, Vaughn was there. You know, we got the hang there. And so, oh, yeah, that's right. You went to my presentation. You know, that was, what'd you think of my vision of the future and what's happening and why?
It was great. I was really impressed with all the technology. I'm an engineer myself, so anything techie, I love it.
Well, get your butt over here and help, man. You know, there's a lot of stuff. I keep getting, you know, you know who Christmas, Santa Claus is? It's a UPS guy, okay? He comes in, I go, ooh, I got more goodies and chemicals and things. We're going to have us some fun. So we're working on that, and we're going to start doing some video. I think that's what we're going to be doing today. Drew's going to be helping us do some video, and we're going to start pushing that and documenting a lot of the experiments and stuff that we're doing. But, you know, in your book, You know, technology, of course, is going to play a big role in that. So my question is, you know, what about currencies? What about, you know, tech? I mean, you know, how are they? Is this in a near future, a far future? Tell us the setting here.
I would say it's about 10 years in the future. So it's pretty close.
So what kind of things that we would see in advance in? What did your imagination give us?
Well, as far as technology goes?
Yeah, I mean, how's our lives changed? I mean, you know, you have implanted eyeball cell phones, or, I mean, you know what?
Well, most of my technology is centered around software and the internet. And they've been developed, the characters are working on ways of trading, and particularly barter, to bypass the depreciating dollar. And it's kind of interesting because some of the things they're doing with Bitcoin now are the stuff I was writing about in this book, which I started writing a few years back. It took me a little while. But some of the mathematical underpinnings of Bitcoin are basically what I was envisioning for the e-barter currency. Not really currency, it's a system. But the thing that's different about it is it's a way of matching, of exchanging real goods and services. And it's very interesting because I recently, just a couple of weeks ago, I heard about the Nobel Prize this year in economics went to a couple of Americans, Shapley and Roth, who had developed a system for matching...
dating or something.
Well, actually, it was supposedly the foundation for speed dating, but it was also used to match organ donors and, organ donors and patients. And that's kind of what I was envisioning. It was like Corporal Klinger back in the MASH TV show where he had to... Well, they needed this for the... for the operating room, and they didn't have it, and the Army didn't get it for them, so they had to get it from somebody else. They wanted something else, and everybody was exchanging something, and finally they eventually got it all figured out.
So you're seeing that as long as you got, you know, the more information, the better, and you got an interactive, aggressive Craigslist software, and you put up I want, and I got, and eventually somebody wants, and it gets traded amongst in an algorithm, and all of a sudden, boom, you're... paperclip got traded for a Mercedes. I mean, you know, it's you know, which could happen. Now, as a matter of fact, they did that very thing. They used Craigslist. Their thing was, I could buy a Porsche, you know, and starting with a nothing, and it took within a month, the guy was able to trade up to get his Porsche. That was the contest, and he did it. I remember that when it first started. So that's kind of what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, exactly. At one point, Joel is. He's in hiding, so he doesn't have a lot of money. He doesn't have health insurance or anything like that. And at one point, he has to see a dentist. And as it happens, there's an underground dentist who accepts these e-barter payments, and who has, because the government gets more and more impressive, they'll like yank people's professional licenses for trivial reasons. This is just a guy who was forced to go underground. And
well, what was his evil crime?
His evil crime was like falling behind in his alimony.
That'll get you. the one thing that I see in a lot of libertarian novels is that it's an opportunity not only to spread the message, but it's to spread the author's message. Okay, now we get this from Taran Lupo. You know, he's using pirates to get the young people involved in the whatever. And he does a really good job on that. He's a good marketer of his books and stuff like that. But, you know, the message that you have in Centrifugal Force, I'm wondering what is the underlying motivation for not only the book, other than you have to get this out, you know, I need to have something to tell and share. But there's a philosophy that you have. And just to say it, well, it's kind of sort of almost probably libertarian. You got to be more specific. You know, everybody's libertarian now. So go ahead and give me, when you get done with this book, what did they learn about your philosophy as a person?
Well, I see my philosophy as being very voluntarist and nonviolent. And in the book, there's a tension between the people who want to actually overthrow the government. For example, there's a character in there called McGinnis, and he's a veteran and a war hero who is very disgruntled with what's been happening to the, you know, how badly the government treats the veterans once they're come back from all these wars. In the book, they're in a war in Nigeria. Of course, any place with oil will be at war in. And so McGinnis,
Nigeria is on the list, I'm sure.
Yeah. So McGinnis organizes a group of veterans to basically takes about overthrowing the government. And although he's well intentioned, Joel opposes this kind of thing because he doesn't believe in any sort of violence. Even though McGinnis's group see themselves as being as a defense of violence of a sort.
Well, we have I'm sure various levels and different jurisdictions of government in here. They good guys got any redeeming factors? Government good in some way. There's always the Paul. What do they call it? The Ryan character in the Tom Clancy movies, you know, there's always that one good. You know, government's bad because we got the wrong people there. If we had the right guy wearing the ring of power, then it would be okay. I mean, do you got any government heroes in here?
Not really. I mean, McGinnis is probably the closest, and he's not with the government anymore. I mean, he's a well-intentioned person, and he tries. There's another character who runs a militia that is kind of a narcissistic, power-hungry type, and McGinnis is always at odds with him, in order to try and like minimize any innocence being harmed and so on.
So in the future, you're coming out with a solution of how society should be organized. I mean, what are you advocating for something or against something? I mean, at the end of this book, when these young men read this, they're going, yeah, I learned what? And we're going to find out when we come back. You know, we have... go ahead and help me with your last name. Von...
Troide. Like Sigmund Freud, almost.
Troide. Okay,
yes.
See, that helps. Okay. Von Troide, Centrifugal Force, the book. You know, a libertarian writing a book. We need more libertarians writing books, you know what I mean? Well, he's written one. We're going to talk more about it. And we'll get the guys involved here when we come back here on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, hello. You know, this is good to do. This is what we're going to do. You know, you have a libertarian mind that is he's a software engineer. You know, Von Troide. Yay, I got it. Okay, yeah, it's a Freud thing. Okay, got it. Now, the thing is that here you have a libertarian mind that actually takes his libertarianism and uses his imagination and comes up with books. The guy got books. Now, here we have the young guys. You know, they're going, yeah, we got some questions here. You know, it's, you know, because, you know, a lot of times young guys, you know, they may have a book in their head, too, and they want to share it, and then they want to ask questions about what they're going to learn. You know, should they, you know, okay, I'll pick it up. I read it. Oh, I might even want to share it. You know, so let's go ahead and go with one of you guys. You know, go ahead and ask a question. Take over, man.
Okay, so one of the things that Devin and I are always looking for is good work to introduce other fellow young people to libertarianism. So I kind of wanted to ask, you know, does the book introduce any economic or philosophical material that would make this a good starter for a young person? Or is it kind of preaching and keeping the morale up against for the choir? You know.
Well, I don't really go into any detail about. I mean, I do mention some of the greats like Murray Rothbard and von Mises and so on are mentioned in the book. So hopefully, people will see that and check it out. You can always go on Wikipedia and so on. But I don't really go into detail because I didn't want to lose people. I wanted to kind of stick with the action. But some of the principles that the characters do discuss for a while, like, we'll discuss philosophical ideas occasionally. At one point, several of them are driving to Chicago in a van, and so they sit around discussing things for a while.
Well, tell me, you know, as a young person, you know, you're how old? When did you graduate high school?
1975.
Okay, so you're in mid-50s, about
yes.
There. So, you know, in the 70s, you're just coming out of Vietnam, you know, just finishing. You probably just skated, didn't get drafted, you know. You by the skin of your teeth, you have a different perspective on a lot of things. You were going into Iran hostage crisis as a young man. You have all the, you know, Iran's the bad guys. We got the Soviet Union. We got the
Moscow Olympics being boycotted by America. We got OPEC. We got, you know, all the war and rumors of wars and increase in gas prices and the same headlines we got now. Okay. So I'm not, there's not a whole lot different. Like my kids, when they're graduating, Dad, you don't understand. Really? Let's go pull out the headlines from when I graduated and what you find out. And I kid you not, the same people. It's not just the same plot. It's the same people.
I found an article in 1992 where Netanyahu was saying that Iran would have nuclear weapons in 3 years. So by 1995, they would have nuclear weapons. And then, you know, they're really beating the war drums in Hollywood. They're producing new movies like Argo, for example, is a CIA movie where it shows the entire Iran hostage crisis all in from an American point of view.
Did you guys see that one?
And no, we didn't. But we looked at it last night with Alex, and we were sitting there just saying, oh, my God, this is just insane because it doesn't include the history.
Well, yeah, I know the it doesn't. It didn't give you a backstory.
No, like we actually went to the movie, and a couple of friends were in there, and Alex and I went in there and got him out of there and got our money back. Hopefully, we can convince him to see Ayn Rand, though.
Really, you went that far? Don't get propagandized.
No, it was more so we didn't want to be there, but yeah, it played a little bit of a role in that.
Bond and I remember that. That was more drum beating America. That's where Nightline came from Ted Koppel. Remember, it was day 37, day 473. I mean, you know, that's where Nightline came from, was covering Iran hostage crisis. And I'm just going, you know, seriously, it's the same thing over and over and over. And people in Iran have to know that this is just a game. It's just a game. So at what, you know, was your early history as a libertarian that flavored your writings and so on? First, tell us about your career, okay? You do what?
Okay, yeah, I write software. Nothing too exciting. The company I work for does laser engravers, which is a pretty cool product. And I just work on the software that has a user interface, allows you to send your pictures and photographs to the laser and have them engraved.
Very cool.
But anyway, yeah, I first started, the Vietnam War was a really polarizing event for me. And at the time I was sort of vaguely pro-war, you know, like most kids my age.
Yeah, make it go bang and really
yeah,
fast.
Yeah, exactly. And I was in... I was in the Congregational Church in confirmation class, and our minister was from the East Coast. He was a very progressive guy, and he had a friend who was a draft dodger who came to speak to our confirmation class. Now, when some of the parents found out about that, you know, they were just went crazy, like, oh, my God, a draft dodger. That's horrible. But the guy really got me thinking. I mean, it really opened my mind, and that was sort of the beginning.
Well, what did he share with you?
Well, basically, he shared how he felt that the war was immoral and that it was better not to participate. Because people always come up with this as well. You're just somebody else is going to have to go in your place and all that stuff. But basically, you can't, you know, justify being in an immoral war someplace where people don't want you to be.
That is amazing, and I've heard that before. I don't think it lasted, you know, through generations, but the idea that if you don't go do this bad thing, then you're going to make somebody else go do this bad thing. So you should do this bad thing so somebody else doesn't have to do the bad thing. And you're a bad person because you're making somebody else do the bad thing they want you to do. And I'm like, wow, that's your A argument? You know? That's your A game? I'm going, man. Oh, I got to ask these young guys. You know, the recruiting and so on, these guys on... a campus. They got to come, you know, visit with you and try and convince you to go be, you know, fight for America. Okay, how does that go?
Did Alex tell you he had recruiters came to Chaparral and, you know, there
Chaparral was High School.
Chaparral High School, right. And he asked them some pretty cool questions about, you know, would you be willing to detain me under the NDAA? That kind of stuff. And, you know, he got some pretty cool questions go out there, but they actually, some of them took it, you know, pretty well. They understand, you know, they, in a weird sense of the word, they understand that, you know, They're good intentioned people a lot of the times. That's why a lot of the veterans were with the Ron Paul campaign.
Yeah, you know, that was amazing. You'd see, I saw a graphic, and it was like an illustration, you know, animated thing, and it had representations of stacks of cash on pallets and who gave what, you know, who are the biggest funders for Obama. And, you know, it's like some special interest day law, whatever. It's, you know, military industrial, we rule you, or pharma, whatever, or Wall Street, something for both of them. Same. Biggest companies that donated Ron Paul, Air Force, Navy, Marines, Army. And I'm going, wow. Man, if that didn't tell you something right there. But no, hell no, that's not an issue. We're not going to talk about that. We're not going to talk. In your book, Centrifugal Force, tell me about how you treat. There's got to be some war going on in here somewhere. There's war somewhere. Is it against the people? Is there an actual war? Somebody got to go fight a war? Are we dealing with any war in here?
Well, yeah. At the time, there's a war in Nigeria, and they've even reinstituted the draft because they had such a hard time getting people to go anymore. And of course, they started it slowly. They started it by saying, "Oh, this is just a national service, and you have the option to go into the military." But eventually, they are sending people over to fight. It just gets as with anything, the government starts gradually. And
well, you know, we remember McCain in 08. His big thing, you know, they were really pushing, as was Obama. We need a domestic force as powerful as the military, kind of thing. And, you know, McCain, oh, we got to get back in service, and everybody should serve so many years in the, you know, in the service of the king, and because. And all your children belong to us, and we got pieces of paper that's embossed with a signature, and they belong to us now, and go fight over there's a sand heap somewhere. And I'm going, you know, that was my line. You know, there's a couple lines you have. One, door-to-door gun confiscation. I'm like, oh, it's on. Okay. Well, yeah, here's all the ones that you know about. You know, have a nice day. And I'll be back. You know, I'll go over here. A lot of times I'll just stay out of the way. But when it comes to your children or ours, the king says they belong to us now. We're going to take them. We're going to force them, coerce them, threaten them, and they're going to serve the man. Oh, you don't want to do that.
Liberty Coin and Precious Metals lets me meet face to face with an expert who takes the time to know me and my investment needs. You can't get that kind of personal attention on the web or from a faraway company. I trust Liberty. Visit their Scottsdale store or call 877-888-8052. That's 877-888-8052. Liberty Coin and Precious Metals. Liberty.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
A lot of these guys, these drum war beaten individuals that I call Americans, you know, MKers, Americans. I'm an MKer, America for America. You know, red, white, and blue America. You know, I'm, it used to mean something. You know, matter of fact, that is the theme of Mark Victor's campaign. You know, what it is to be an American. That's what he's been doing. He's going around, he goes, you know, they do this and advocate that and yada, yada, that's not American. They were talking about it. That's not American. You know, well, we need it. That's not American. You know, let me tell you what American is. You know, it's that libertarian thing. Okay? So this is where we're at. We have, you know, what I'm looking forward to is seeing the evolution in the society to where our heritage that we embraced at one time that was very popular, this freedom-oriented, rugged individual, pioneer spirit, you know, out in the lone prairie, mountain man, kind of leave me alone, I take care of myself and friends and neighbors and community and village and all that kind of stuff. You know, that was ingrained in our culture. You know who the bad guys were? You know, the bad guys that, you know, had the Simon Legree laugh and everything? They were the ones that were opposed to that. They're the ones trying to control people, trying to steal land from someone, trying to fraud them out of the widow's inheritance from whatever and take. You know, and being mean orphans and all that kind of, they were the bad guys. You know, well, now, who's supposed to be the bad guy? You know who the bad guys are now? You know, the bad guys are the ones that, you know, don't advocate putting a gun to someone's head, taking all their stuff to redistribute. And I'm going, come on. You know, this is, we need to make sure that we change the culture. And one of the best ways to do that is to get between the ears, you know, start people thinking, get in their mind, start having an impact. Now, the young guys here in the third hour, we're going to talk about a lot of the activism and giving their personal experiences in their first time of really going out being buttheads, you know, as teenagers in the political process and having an impact on the entire freaking planet, you know, from here going, oh, that was easy. That makes them dangerous. They find out how easy it is. But, you know, for the rest of this segment, I want to talk to Vaughn. You know, Vaughn Troyday has, you go to Amazon and you can get Centrifugal Force. Just look up Centrifugal Force on Amazon, boom, ebook. Get down on your Kindle, get it on your e-reader, get boom, done. You're going to sit there and start reading about, because you have a libertarian that's been around for a long time, software engineer. You know, working for a company, making sure lasers go where they need to go and interface with people that kind of, you know, and etching and whatever. And when you got the ability to, you know, make lasers go where you want to go, that's always good to know. You know what I mean? So I'm going, all right, all right, all right. So he writes a book. He's got other books in his head. Why? Because they got, man, we got to share. We got to put out, you know, the truth as you see it, a philosophy that's consistent, something. So I see him at libertarian events. You know, he's at Libertopia. You know, here's an author, someone that I'm hoping comes out of this generation, Generation Next. They come out, they're in the art. You saw it in just the last 4 or 5 years. All of a sudden, you couldn't find liberty art. Now you freaking can't walk around without stumbling over it. I mean, there's just all kinds of stuff out. As a matter of fact, Angel Clark does a show in the afternoon on LRN. She wants us, she's can take over some of the administration of our Facebook for Freedom's Phoenix. She's going to show me what she can do with it. But she goes, you know what I need? I need a bunch of graphics. I'm like, you know what? Freedom's Phoenix got a lot of graphics. So I'm going to be sending her big, giant files. Just dumb. I said, you want some cool graphics? Here you go. Thousands and thousands of them. We have like 200,000 headline stories that we've done over the years on Freedom's Phoenix, and every one of them had a graphic. Now, we might use one, you know, more than once, but I mean, you know, that's how many thousands is that? It's like a lot. So we're going to share that. Now, that's why I'm encouraging people that penetrate the culture with writing, with ideas, spark the next generation. But, you know, if it's inconsistent, you know, how's that work out? So I got to ask Vaughn Troyday, all right? So tell me, you know, how consistent is this on libertarian philosophy? Is it, you know, leaking a little bit? Are you hardcore? You know, what kind of message are they going to get out of this stuff?
Well, personally, I'm a pretty hardcore anarcho-capitalist type. But as far as the characters, I didn't want to make them all the same. We have kind of a range. Some of them are sort of a constitutionalist viewpoint. Others are just sort of libertarian-oriented conservatives. But the idea is that we have a bunch of people working together, all with the same goals. I don't want to say that everybody has to believe the same thing. I'm not one of those libertarians that say, well, unless you want to abolish the Fed right away, I'm not going to deal with you. I mean, I believe it's got to be a big tent. We've got to work together. We've got to have people of all creeds and ethnic groups all together. And I have, you know, a number of people of different backgrounds in the book. We even have a sympathetic Muslim character because I felt that, I mean, they were being demonized in the media and so on.
Well, there's that one hardcore guy, right? You know, it's like, I'll give you an example. When the TV show West Wing came on, okay, it was really popular and all the buzz and so on. I watched a couple of episodes and I'm going, you can't have the file clerk or the pizza delivery guy or somebody be libertarian. I mean, everybody has to be a communist or a fascist in the entire freaking series. There can't be that one, you know, rebel something, somebody's brother's ex-roommate's former girlfriend or something that, you know, thinks freedom's okay. I mean, come on. So this is, as you get through this, I don't want to have to, like, think I'm going to convince somebody of something. But if I can have them understand why I'm so convinced, if they can understand, the government will, you know, bring them around. They do a real good job. They're good recruiters, okay? So as the recruiting's going on out here in society, you know, you're being able to use a media that is going to get, you know, into someone's head. Do you have some other books and themes that you're going to be working on that do the same thing?
Oh, I'm working on one right now. It's called Fidelio's Automata. It's a steampunk novel, and for those of you who aren't familiar with that genre, it's really popular right now, It's a kind of retro historical science fiction, as if you were like Jules Verne or H.G. Wells writing back in the 1890s about what the future was going to be like. So sort of an alternate history. There's lots of zeppelins and steam power and so on. And you can use historical people in the as your characters, but you can also change them. For example, Nikola Tesla and Thomas Edison are characters in this book I'm writing.
Tesla gets powering the Zeppelin and man, we're zooming. That's very cool. Very cool. So, that could be, I wonder if you see writing as an outlet just of your creative side, or is it motivated more by your philosophical side? You want to express what, an idea or a philosophy? What drives you?
Well, it's most of what I write has some kind of political philosophy to it, but it's more than that. I've found I really, really enjoy writing, and it's just fun to create worlds from nothing. And I even started getting into theater. I'm collaborating on a play about a musical comedy about online dating, which is not at all political, but I think it's going to be pretty funny. May take us a while to finish it, but.
Obviously you don't have anything else to do, so this is it occupies your mind, a creative spirit to do this. I'm in the service of freedom, man. I'm all for it. That's why I want to support you. People out there using their talents to forward at least understanding of liberty. I'm like, cool.
Well, I guess it's a good thing I have dogs, because I have my best ideas while I'm walking the dogs early in the morning. I think of a lot of ideas for stories and so on, and I find the more you exercise that part of your brain, the more you get inventive and creative.
Oh, I get inventive creative when I exercise my brain, and I'm a really, 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 really get creative, and I'm also a lot nicer. Donna, she likes when I exercise my brain. She's like, chill out. With a bong! No. Did I say that out loud? What we're going to do when we get back, this is what we got to look forward to. When we come back, we're going to have Devin, Derek, and the recently awakened Alex. He's here. And they're all going to share what's happened over the last couple of weeks doing their trash can flyer thing and some of the experiences they have with their friends and how they thought about it and all the people that have been involved, in the media and so on. So we're going to have some fun with this. But Von Troide, go to Amazon and you make sure you look up Centrifugal Force. Just download a few bucks, boom. Download On Kent Breed, boom. And then, give me some reviews. Let me know, because he's got more books are coming. And we like libertarian book writers here on Declare Your Independence. Right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
I tell you what happened. This is how it came about. Michael Kilsky, I give you the history real quick, and we'll hopefully be able to get him on the air during this hour, but he's busy. Okay, that's what happens. And I'll tell it for the young guys here. They've been putting up his signs and everything. You get a little history here. Michael Kilsky is a computer uber geek, okay? So he has his own web kind of doing, running, hosting, security background. You go messing with Freedom's Phoenix, I know who did it. I mean, we tracked it down in Germany from a company that worked for Israel that we get. I mean, it was good. Now, what happens? Now, big security Uber geek Michael Kilsky, you know, he had a run-in with the law that was very unjust. He always had, he's a big Second Amendment guy. He had his firearm with me, and he was getting, somebody tried to mug him in a parking lot of the apartment complex, you know, he was at. And they come out and, you know, pull their knives or whatever on him, and he's like, I don't think so. And he just held him there for the police. Then they charged him with kidnapping. I'm going, are you freaking kidding me? So this was like, it blew him away. Now, eventually it got all taken care of and so on, but it motivated him. Here's a guy with a master's in computer science to go and get his law degree. He's going, you know what? There'd be something right. We need some libertarians in this, you know, this criminal thing, you know? So he went and got his law degree. He started working. I mean, he didn't even like getting this bar card. He hated the whole process or whatever. So, you know, Mark Victor convinced him, yeah, go ahead and go in here and fight with me and I'll help. And so Mark and Michael work together a lot of times. You know, some of the things that one of them can't take or something, you know, the other will do. So Michael's playing attorney. Well, now we need somebody that you got to be an attorney to run for, county attorney. Well, here we got a libertarian, a head up with the incumbent Republican that is a man. I mean, he's a goose stepper, big time. So what happens is, here comes the libertarian saying, hello, decriminalization of drugs. And he has new signs that he's put up. I don't know if we have some of the signs here. We got some of the logos and such up here in the artwork that we're running. But the signs that we just put up, we put up a bunch more yesterday. Me and Barry and Drew went out. And the signs have a, from the philosophy of liberty, they have these little insignias. One of them is a marijuana leaf, you know, liberty. One of them is a peace sign, life. One of them is a house, property, life, liberty, property. You know, they're going, but it's a peace symbol, marijuana leaf, and a house. And they're like, what the heck does that mean? And it's like, you know, peace, you know, freedom. Property. I mean, you know, what kind of county attorney do you want? Well, that's the kind that a lot of these young guys want. And he's been hardcore anarchist. I mean, he's just, you know, he's one of those, the best government is none. But, you know, in the process, and he was state chair of the Libertarian Party for years, just kept it from getting in trouble. Hey, man, we fill out all the right paperwork. You guys, big on go. He didn't want one of those that had some agenda to do anything other than to maintain our ballot status and have it there as a tool for the activists to use. Thank you. That's all we wanted. Michael took care of that. So now Michael is, really elevated himself in a debate. And he was at the Arizona Breakfast Club last a couple weeks ago, and he did great. They did his 10 minutes of Be Healed. Man, he's like, oh, you know, who do you want? Like Barry would say, who do you want but an extremist in defense of your liberties? Well, he's an extremist. So I'm going, all right, cool. So these are things that, you know, these young guys probably didn't know. But I'll tell you this. There is we were at a fundraiser for Mark Victor. Michael was there. And he introduced me to you guys. And he's like, here's some activists. And Michael made it very clear. He goes, they're mine. You know, they work in service of the campaign. So I'm going, okay. So they wanted to have something to do. You know, what kind of creative thing can we do? So we came up with the trash can flyers. Now I'm going to have, you know, Al, we're going to let him talk, you know, even because he was late. No, that's right. You don't get to talk because you were late. So then we're going to go ahead and we'll go to Devin and Derek first. And we'll go ahead. Tell us about the project as you perceived it, what we did. You came in, that was a Wednesday. You came in studio early Friday morning, and we started, you know, kind of getting the verbiage done and everything. Had it done within a week, we had them printed, done, you know. So let's go ahead and talk about how you perceived the project idea, and we were talking about what you were thinking and what we did. Go ahead and give us your thing, man.
You said it. We were working with Kielski, and he introduced you to us. And, you know, you said that you had a good idea. And we were talking about the flyer. And within a week, we came on the radio with you. And we talked about, you know, what would people take seriously on a flyer like this and what would be too extreme. And some of the things that we came up with, we changed some of the verbiage towards some more modern stuff like NDAA, and we started talking about predator drones, and a lot of the things that were on here we didn't change, but some of it...
Yeah, like the drone thing, we would have never even... When we first started doing this, 5 years ago, We even had the concept earlier in that. We just never actually enacted it. You know, the drone thing never even crossed my mind that you'd have, you know, Terminator drone going around kind of stuff. And you know they're going to be arming them, you know, pretty well, heck, they are. You know, the Predator, you're just waiting for Militia De La whatever, you know, zap. And I'm going, it's almost like you can't be Orwellian enough, you know. So here, was anything here that you thought that was kind of reaching, that was more science fiction, that was in the future? I think just about everything on here is accurate now.
Yeah, I would say most of it's accurate. I just say maybe some of the specifics. Like, I don't know anyone that goes through your Rolodex or your daily planner. That might be a little futuristic.
Yeah, the government. Well, hell, the Rolodex is not even there. I'm surprised you guys even know what a Rolodex is. But so we went through your, you know, your stuff, your private files kind of thing. So that's one way of doing it. But as you tell me about when we first got these printed and you actually showed it to your friends at school and so on, what was their impact?
Well, their initial reaction was like, there's no way you're doing this, you know. You guys can't go do this. You're getting way too much trouble. This is wrong or whatever, you know. But we did, a couple of our friends were really into it. They thought it was a really cool idea. We were blown away by the idea when you first introduced it to us. So quite a few other people were too, and they actually came along and helped us hand them out, because it's a two-person job. Someone has to hand it out, and then, you know, someone else has to drive.
Okay, well, this is the concept for those of you that haven't been listening to the show and don't know. It is a big orange flyer. Okay, let me go ahead and go to the video, and you guys can see. Okay, you go to someone's trash can, and you put this under the lid after it's been picked up. And it's got the all-seeing eye over the earth total information awareness logo that is real. I was like, are you freaking kidding me? So we said, all right, while you're out, the agency came by and stopped and said, and Agent 4409, homage to Shelton's videos, and we said, all right, we came by and we checked your trash and we went through all that, talked to your neighbors, and we checked a few different boxes, different agencies, and then at the bottom we have AZTipHotline.info. And you go to that site, it's like, oh, we're watching you. But it's because we love you so much. And this is what happened. I'll skip to the end on some of this stuff. We'll get going, because I tell you what happened this weekend. And we're going into the break. I'm at Libertopia, and all of a sudden, my phone starts ringing. You know, not a whole lot. You know, a couple times, a few times. But it was one of the television stations that we put their phone number on. Ah, did you get your mandatory vaccination? We need to interview you and check and everything. Call these numbers. Well, the numbers were the newsrooms at various different print and radio and television. Well, Channel 12, the Gannett, that owns also the Republic, the newspaper, they started giving them out my cell number. They go, call him, he did it. I go, oh, yeah, baby, let's have a conversation. We'll talk about some of those. Oh, they all like it.
Arizona has been one of the hottest real estate markets in the past, up until the last couple of years. Homes that were once going for $500,000 to $1 million in prestigious areas are now going for less than half of what the original purchase price was. That makes it a very good time to buy. So if you were ever thinking of retiring to Arizona's inviting climate and laid-back and friendly lifestyle, now is the time. That's where I can help. This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty, and I have provided a way for you to search for properties that are of interest to you, all at your own convenience and without having to give out any personal information. Visit my webpage at DonnaHancock.com to start your search today. And when you're ready to make a move to Arizona's warm and sunny climate, please feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. Many are working hard to make sure Arizona is not only a beautiful place to live, but a free and peaceful one as well. So what are you waiting for? Make your move today by calling 602-828-1819. And don't forget to visit my webpage at DonnaHancock.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Wow! 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 I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't.
Yeah, because I got Mr. Michael Kilske on the line, running for Maricopa County Attorney against the incumbent Bill Montgomery. That is a goose stepper, man. I mean, big time. I've been on the campaign trail with this guy, and I get it. You know, he's like a tank commander and a
kind of dude, and I'm going to go, let's go kick us some butt. Yeah, oh, yeah, no, I'll debate you. I'll do it. We know how the dials are controlled on the vote. We got, ooh, let's do it. Of course, you never see him, but you know the thing is, he's just, oh yeah, I got the justification and the backing of the people to go whip me some butt on whatever, and we got to put dope smokers in jail forever. I mean, you know, if it was up to me, it'd be death penalty and problem solved. I mean, you know, it's that kind of guy, and it's just and there's nobody running against him except Mr. Libertarian Michael Kilski. So in the time that we got here, Michael, tell me everything about the campaign. How's it going? People talking to you? Everything go?
Well, the campaign is going very well. We are getting a lot of support from all corners. People are coming up to me all the time and saying, well, these days they're telling me, I just voted for you. Again, there's lots of people that surprise me and come up to me and tell me, well, you know, I can't say it. You know, I got to say it real quiet, but I'm supporting you, I'm voting for you. And so forth. You know, this is a very interesting race. People may not understand the dynamics here, but in Arizona and Maricopa County especially, people think that Arizona is a conservative state, Arizona is a red state. I don't think that's correct. Arizona is something else. It tends to conservative, it tends to red, but it's not. Arizona is, I think the voters of Arizona and Maricopa County tend to be somewhat independent thinking in many cases, especially when given the option. 2 years ago, we passed medical marijuana for the third time. So we've got the county attorney right now who has made recently a very big deal out of going after medical marijuana users, the dispensary program, and et cetera. So in my mind, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to any thinking person why any resources are being wasted on that when there's somewhere between 60 and 70% of murders in Maricopa County are unsolved. So I made a big deal out of that, out of the idea that we shouldn't be using any resources prosecuting victimless crimes. We should be using those resources, redirecting them to prosecuting actual people who are hurting.
Well, what's their response to this? I mean, how could they argue with that other than just ignore it? I mean, you know, he's like, well, no, they're doing drugs, they must die.
Well, Bill Montgomery's response is, quite frankly, there's no such thing as a victimless crime. If the crime's on the books, I believe this is what he means by that, is I think he's saying if there's a crime on the books, then by definition there's a victim. If the victim is the family of the drug abuser, or the victim is their employer, or society at large, or God, I have no idea who the victim is. I mean, but he insists there's no such thing as a victim.
Well, you know, when there is a crime, when there is an aggression, when there is, we're at Libertopia, and Mark was speaking, and one guy goes, yeah, well, if you had a meth addict, you know, blah, 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 well, okay, well, then that's the crime. You know, the crime, I don't give a crap why he did something, it's that he did it. And they don't focus on the actual aggression part, they focus on the control part. And Bill Montgomery is a controller big time.
Well, again, I am... You know, not much to add to that. My point is very straightforward. It's pretty straightforward to look at it. If there's a victim, if I can identify a victim and I can identify a harm, there we go. That's a crime that needs to be prosecuted. And again, my number one goal is victim restitution. That's the first job, because again, the way the system is being run right now, the victim is victimized all over again, because, you know, somebody steals a candy bar, and the next thing you know, instead of the victim getting compensated by the criminal for the stolen candy bar, the victim now has to pay to house the thief in prison, and, you know, take, you know, house them and pay for their food and pay for their health care.
No, and it's not only that, it's to pay, you know, the buddy of the guy that put him there that owns the prison company. I mean, it's just getting really bad. Hey, we got some of the young guys here out putting signs up. Oh, we're putting more signs up. Oh, did you get our text? We're putting up signs up yesterday. We sent you text. We sent you text.
There's lots of signs being put up all over the place. Every day somebody is putting up more signs. And I'm asking people, you know, to put up signs, post it on Facebook, and let people know that where the signs are going up. And then more signs are going up all the time.
Northwest Valley, we got you. Now, here's some of the young guys. They wanted to ask you something. Go ahead, guys.
Hey, Michael. So we wanted to ask, you know, did you have, when you say that not prosecuting victimless crimes, do you have any numbers or data on, you know, how many resources does that save?
Actually, I don't, because the prosecutor's office doesn't have the statistics, or at least they don't make those available. I will say this, that according to the Federal Bureau of Justice Statistics, Arizona's prison population is between 18% and 20% are people that are there solely for drug possession. There's no violence. Nobody's accusing them of being involved in any violence. It's possession. Now, most of those are going to be possession of numbers of amounts that where the possession is possession with intent to sell. But some of them are there because, you know, it's the third time or the fourth time or whatever time of possession, so it becomes a felony and they have to do prison time. So that's maybe a fifth of the prison population is there without, you know, again, based on the Federal Bureau of Justice Statistics, based on a mere allegation that they had some stuff.
Without really bothering anybody. And, you know, it's even worse than that, because it's not the people. How many people are not in prison, but are tax slaves or fine slaves or fees to the man and probation and treatment and all this other slave? You know, once they get you in their net, man, they're all over it. And you're a criminal defense attorney, so you see this on the other end, too.
Well, I see this all the time, and I deal with quite a bit of the misdemeanor level criminal accusations. And a lot of the stuff that I see there is just, it's ridiculous. It is insane that they even bothering with some of these petty things that amount to, well, yeah, technically, if we ignore this one sentence and this one phrase, and if we ignore this other thing, then it's a crime. Yeah, let's go get it. And,
well, really, I'm glad you're there, man. You know, you've been doing a good job, and your speech at the Breakfast Club was impassioned. Great. Hopefully you pulled that video off of what they put up on YouTube for the Breakfast Club, because that was awesome. And you know,
it's on my website.
On your website, which is
Kilski.com or freemaricopa.com.
Freemaricopa.com.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Now, this is what we're doing. We're dialing the station. See, I don't know.
I came out to my... Yeah, and it says I have to call this number for a mandatory vaccination and interview questions. This number is 602-685-6351. Well, what are you guys? What? Well, what am I supposed to do with this now? Yeah, Office of Total Awareness Information. And then it says, for more information, go to www.aztiphotline.info. Well, it's kind of freaky, actually. Yeah, it's in my trash can. It says, Agent 4409, stop by. I mean, they're going through my garbage or something. I mean, unless this... Well, I mean, I got people living in my house, and they're kind of scared, too. Okay, well... Okay, well, you know, I gotta start going to work now, but... All right, bye.
Yeah, we should have done it from your cell phone. By using this phone, I couldn't hear it. You know, the other side. That's why we made a mistake of doing that. We should have had him use his cell phone. Then we could have, you know, listened to the other side.
How Kielski did it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, the thing is that, well, no, it's because when you're on it, it doesn't go into the system, you know, until we hang it up and do the thing. So this is what we're doing. We're calling on the AZ Tip Hotline trash can flyer. We're calling the Channel 12 newsroom. You know, it's, hey, man, I got this flyer. You know, I don't think that many people are calling as much as they think they are because they get it. I mean, you know, it's kind of like, this is, you know, because they're more educated now. 4 or 5 years ago, oh, man, it freaked everybody out. They were getting flooded. Well, they got enough calls this time to piss them off and give them my cell number, you know. So this, maybe it was in the afternoon, and usually when they come home and it's on the thing, they're calling the afternoon shift. So I bet the morning shift, they're like, the hell are you talking about, you know? So what was the conversation? What happened?
Well, she was just telling me, like, oh my God, I don't know what that is. This is ABC News.
I think it's NBC is that one. But the so go ahead and tell the one thing that is going on today. You guys are on break this week, right?
Yeah, we're on break from school.
Okay. I want to tell this before we get too far into this. Okay, what's going on at Chaparral High School right now?
Well, my teacher or my principal said don't show up to Chaparral today because the SWAT's going to be training there, and we don't want to get in their way.
Why would they even tell? That's like, you know, is that like a, you know, subliminal everybody come to the school or something? I mean, why would even during break? Who's going to go to school?
I think she's proud of the fact that at school the SWAT would come to their school of all schools.
Oh, she's so happy.
Yeah.
No, which is everybody clean out their locker of all their drugs or something?
Yeah. Well, we've got a very interesting modern school that kind of looks like a city. So it's kind of freaky.
What do you mean?
I understand the overall purpose is to, like, know the school in case a gunman comes in or something. But we got a kind of school that's, it's pretty modern and it doesn't look like a school. It looks like a city with rooms and buildings.
Really?
Yeah, it's a mini city.
So they got mini city SWAT team exercise.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys are going to head over there and see what's up?
Yeah.
Yeah, take some pictures.
This is the last known recording of Alex Miley.
You know, there's a picture, one of the pictures that we've been putting up here that has in science fiction section at the library, you know, a Keynesian economics book. And I didn't recognize it. I'm going, what the hell? Oh, I get it. And you said, yeah, you're the one that took that picture.
Yeah, I went over. I was in the economics section just with a friend. He was getting a book. And I told him, I'm like, there's not going to be a single book here that I agree with. And I see it. I'm like, bang. I'm like, I have a good idea.
Okay, so this is another story I want to do. We got time. Yeah, we do this segment real quick. Okay. Now, you're Devin or Derek?
I'm Devin.
Devin, okay. Now, Devin. Yeah, they're twins. Devin. I wanted you called me. We were talking, and you're like, "Oh yeah, I'm going to do this trash can thing. I'm going to get my dad.
Right.
I'm going to nut him up." And I go, "No. Don't drag it out too long. Let's not have, you know, the aneurysms and stuff." So, you know, so you went and you're going to get your dad. You think he's a good sport on this thing? So tell him, set it up and tell us what happened.
Well, obviously, since I know my dad personally, I was able to check off a couple more things on the list that I knew would, you know, target him a little bit more personally. So we gave him a drone, and we searched a couple more things and put some wires in his house. Not literally, of course. We just checked it off. But my stepmom actually got a recording of him looking through the list, and he's reading down. They went through our trash, honey. There's wires in the house. We have a drone. It was like, what is this?
Was he taking it seriously?
Yeah, he was for a second, and then he I guess he looked up at her and was like in shock, and she goes, "It's from the boys." And so it worked out pretty well.
So was he relieved? He's like, "Oh my God, man, I'm gonna slap him around."
Well, see what's been going on is at a restaurant. The police like to park there outside. They park outside and they pull people over that immediately pull out of the restaurant.
Sons of bitches, man.
It's kind of a bar, and there's a lot of younger people there.
And so every time they come onto our property, he goes and said, you know, get off our property. And so he's been getting harassed to the point where they're actually coming to the house and knocking on our windows and shining flashlights in the house.
No way.
And,
why? Well,
he's a little bit more confrontational than most individuals would be with the police.
Oh.
So, you know, he kind of asked for it in a little bit of a way, but obviously it's, I'm not, speaking in legal terms. I don't know if he's always correct or whatnot, but anyways, it was a good addition to that, you know. It went along with it pretty well.
Oh, that's good. Well, you know, you get an initial impact of that. I mean, it hits you. That's why people that are most upset. I'll tell you, the two that I remember that I actually answered the phone and talked to, and I'm sure they were related. One was the daughter, and the other was the father that was a retired police officer.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the people it messes up. They get this, you know, hey, man, you know, not me. Oh, if you don't have anything to hide, you know, and then all of a sudden they get one of these on their trash. Man, they're not, you know, they don't like the feeling that they get. And it's probably a feeling that they never had before. You know, they're always the guys given that feeling.
Yeah.
They never are on the receiving end. And when they get this, they're like, oh, and they don't like it. They don't like it one bit. That emotion sticks with them for the rest of their freaking life. They are never the same. And it pisses them off. So I'm going, oh, so that's why I was saying, man, don't send your father into a coma, okay? You know, just, you know, get, if he's not a bad guy, let's not, you know. But, you know, hey, so he was a good sport about it.
Yeah, and he watches enough Fox News so that it kind of almost a little bit, it helped him out a little bit.
So you cured him, you think?
Brought him closer to the light.
So did he admonish you at all? Did he was like, oh, man, did you pay for it a little bit?
A little bit, but not very much. He thought it was pretty funny. He gave us $100 for working the other day, and he's like, I want that back.
Did you give it back?
No.
So, Al, with, you know, this project, what have your friends thought about it?
Oh, they just know I'm the crazy guy, so they don't really... Nothing surprises anybody anymore. I don't know. Not a lot of people want to do it with me, but...
Yeah, I wouldn't want to do it
sure
with
like
you.
To watch.
You know, the thing is, what you take a lot of this stuff, and you were asking the recruiter. You know, recruiter came. You're starting to give them what for. When we come back, we're going to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
What kind of, you know, problem you're causing there. You're just, you know, being your teacher or your principal or... You know, do they really want to mess with you?
I don't think they do. They think I'm crazy.
That'd be crazy, man. All that freedom stuff make you crazy.
Liberty Coin simplifies the process of buying coins and precious metals. No hidden fees, no hard sell, no mystery. Just great prices. In fact, some of the best prices in the nation. And they've become one of the largest gold sellers in the Southwest. I trust Liberty. Visit their Scottsdale store or call 877-888-8052. That's 877-888-8052.
Liberty.
Quantum Vibe. It's year 2523. There are colonies on Venus, Mars, and Mercury. People travel in bubbles, fly at hyperspeed. With brain implants and artificial gravity. Scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. QuantumVibe.com from Big Head Press.
We know you're out there. We can feel you now. We know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. We don't know the future. We aren't here to tell you how this is going to end. We're here to tell you how it's going to begin. We're going back to editing the next edition of Freedom's Phoenix Digital Magazine now, where we are telling the people what you don't want them to know. We're showing them a world without you, a world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries, a world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice we leave to you. Subscribe at freedomsphoenixeasy.com. That's freedoms with an S, phoenixeasy.com.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show.
where we're going, there aren't any roads.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Okay, I can't freaking believe some of the stories that they're telling me. I go, why didn't you ever tell me this stuff before? Okay. God, man, these guys, this is life and that public education. This is just how, this is everyday stuff. Okay, so I'm going to tell you a couple of things we're going to talk about because I want to squeeze this in. All right, one, we have the recruiters, all right? Al, you know, gets to talk to recruiters and give them what first, so that's of interest. Then there is Marx and Engels being taught, you know, communism in English, and how are they able to do that? Every day for months, we're going to teach you all about how we got to be all communists. Then, to prove a point, one of their friends, the Chaparral Public High School, okay? Because I guess you guys went there, too, and that's how you know Alex, and he went to private school. So, at Chaparral High School, this was last year, there was a guy, to prove a point, started the Communist Club, okay? Just to, you know, yeah, see, and then the administration went freaking, of all in the yearbook, of all of the clubs, none of them are shown except the Communist Club. And they're wanting to take pictures. You got to tell us about this. You know, who is this guy? How did that happen? And, oh, yeah, what's the name of the vice principal that was wanting to put him on the speaker and do announcements and get him all recruited and everything? What's her name?
Mrs. Holland.
Mrs. Holland. Hello, Mrs. Holland at Chaparral High School. Are you freaking kidding me? Okay, tell me who this guy is and why he did it and what happened.
His name is David Beckstrom. He went and started a communist club, kind of as a joke, but he didn't realize that Devin and I were politically involved, and we said we would love to help him. And so we came over, we did the project, we made the logos, we put this big communist star up, and we put the Chaparral Firebird grabbing a hammer and sickle, and it was flying away with the hammer and sickle, and we put it all up, and he put it on a poster board, and he went the next day, and the next day he tells us that out of all the clubs there, the administration, all of them went and took a picture with his stand there. They all went and took a picture with his stand and told him that until he's overflowed with volunteers, he's going to be on the announcements every day for 2 minutes promoting the Chaparral Communist Club.
Oh, damn! Snap! Okay. So then what happened? He's in the yearbook. Didn't they know by then that he was just gaming them?
We have so many booths and clubs, and it's kind of crazy how his was the only one that was chosen. It's kind of weird, isn't it?
I am dumbfounded at how obvious this is.
And all of the administration just went over in awe and took pictures and were having a good time and thought it was hilarious and just...
Well, didn't they know he was goofing them?
No. They thought he was completely serious. This kid can play it off. He just straight face, join the Communist Club. Good. Here's a lollipop.
Yeah, there's a really interesting connection, though, is the other story where we got taught communism in English class. They're the ones who designed the yearbook. Her name is Stacy Skolnick. She was an English teacher. She's a closet Marxist, and she was the one that designed the yearbook. And she would always title the yearbooks in a very weird fashion where it would say, you know, global unity or world workers of the world unite. All that stuff would be very, you know, it would be in the background, but you could see it. You could see the communist, you know, background towards the...
And she would have sections with current events of Barack Obama winning, and, you know, bipartisan bill being voted by. It was just ridiculously communist and just leftist and just brainwashing.
Oh, my God. Facebook must be their worst enemy.
Well, this lady, this same lady.
I mean, you guys
lady,
just being able to communicate and bypass all that stuff. So, same lady, what?
So, this same lady was the lady that taught literary theory, and this is a nationwide thing. The first time I ever encountered it was actually on the National Education Association's one of their meetings, and one of their meetings was that if you want to express communal function and spread communism in the classroom, you have to have communal work done. So every Tuesday and Thursday, you'll get your desk together, and you will have your students work together. And, you know, about a week or two after that, I saw that we had our desk together, and every Tuesday and Thursday we were working together. And so this lady was totally into the communist, you know, ideology, and she would teach us Marx and Engels through this idea called literary theory, where they take a theory and attach the word literary to it and teach it in an English class. And so every day for about 3 months, we learned about how Marx and Engels and the whole history of the world was about class struggle, and how all these evil capitalists were going to destroy the world.
Okay, all right. So what's the counter to that? Is there another, you know, like a freedom-oriented teacher that's left, or you guys are just counting on your peers to help you
then
out?
Then we have history, honors, economics, and we're watching movies how the human mind doesn't actually know what they want.
And they play this irrationality. So they say that in a subjective science, if you can find something that doesn't quite align mathematically, where none of the variables are consistent, then everything is wrong. And it's just complete weird Keynesian oddball stuff.
Well, what's
that
a counter?
Make any sense. There is no counter.
Michael Moore movies and me getting kicked out of the class.
Yeah, there is no counter. And then,
okay, wait a minute. Tell me how the Michael Moore movie got you kicked out of class.
We were watching the Bowling for Columbine, and I was just making jokes. I was saying, like, if I was a fat filmmaker and blame capitalism for all the world's problems, I'd have $1 million. And she was pro Michael Moore and totally against gun rights and stuff like that. And he was only interviewing the most radical weirdos for our standpoint, you know? And I was screaming out. I'm like, this is what's right. And, you know, they're right, but they're like wackos. And it makes us look bad. It makes us look crazy.
I'm sure you probably don't need a lot of help. But the the main thing that I'm looking at is, do you really have to count on the students themselves to be the balance to the indoctrination? I mean, is that what's happened? And how does that come about? Is it Facebook? Is it just a conversation, email list? I mean, is there anybody on your guys' side?
Mises Institute is a beautiful website. Beautiful website. We turned to Mises Institute, and they have so much free information there. They have free books, free podcasts, free online audio tapes. They have all the information about free market economics, anarcho-capitalism, and the beauty of natural law and natural freedom that you could ever want. And it's all for free.
And it just...
Mises.org.
Eat it.
Yeah.
Well, Mises.org.
They're really... Back to the other question. They're really... I don't think anybody really cares. My age necessarily, like a lot of people agree with us and say that we're right, but they really don't care so much right now.
Or do they are they kind of leaning or embracing what the communist BS?
Yeah. They're definitely leaning to they protect us, they're given to us by God, and they're the only purebred human beings that can give us what we want.
Wow.
Yeah. That's just pounded in our subconscious from day one.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So have you used the flyers at the school yet in any way?
No, that's a good idea, though.
Yeah, you know, we can customize this for cars.
Yeah, we should customize them for cars.
Yeah, yeah, we should customize them for hotel rooms.
We should do it for lockers because kids are gullible.
Oh,
kids are
gullible. Do you guys still have lockers? Yeah. I thought they did away with lockers.
Oh, yeah, we got lockers.
Lockers. And you get them in a small kind of, you know, you put it like the TSA thing that's in your baggage. You just put them in the vent. All of a sudden they open up and the thing falls out. They inspected their locker.
Please come to the front office.
We can do it after the SWAT thing that was here today.
Yeah.
When they come to school, when you come back to school, Monday?
Yeah, Monday.
Oh, can you get there early? So when they open up the school, do you have access to the lockers early?
Yes.
So you could go in early Monday, early, put it in all the lockers. Okay, you get there early. All right. So we get there. So you go, and you got to be careful, man. You get there early before they come back, and they had their little SWAT team thing. They come back from their spring break, and they got the TSA, we checked your luggage kind of crap flyer in their locker.
Yeah, we don't
Done.
Like notes.
Done. Done. And we should put the Communist Party did it. the Communist Club.
That
courtesy of the Communist
show.
Club.
Comrade, you've been chosen.
No! This is how it happens. This is how it happens. I can't freaking believe they would be that openly adamant about this. And, you know, we got to get our picture taken with the Communist Club, and they don't know they're being punked. Did it ever come out that they were punked? Did they ever learn that they were being punked?
No, the club just died down. Which just
yeah, never survived.
Like communism, ironically.
The kid that was doing it, he never intended it for it to become a club. He never submitted a form or anything. So it
oh,
never was
care.
A really form.
Yeah, they didn't care. You don't need a form. You're the Communist Club.
Yeah, if you were the Capitalist Club, you'd have to fill out the yellow paper, the blue paper, the green paper.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, this is what we do, rock and roll and whatnot. And SWAT team. Come, yo, we're going to write this up now. Are you kidding? We're going to get in so much trouble. Somebody's going to get in trouble. You know, I hope they get in trouble. We'll talk about it for a long time, bunch of time.